Pastini is Eugene's new Italian bistro at Oakway Center, dedicated to serving up two of life's greatest pleasures, pasta and wine. Join them for classic favorites like spaghetti and meatballs, linguine with clams and sausage, and fettuccine alfredo paired with hand-selected Pacific Northwest and Italian wines. Pastini. Eat pasta. Drink wine.
Welcome to the Duck Pod from DuckSports.com. Here's Ryan Thorburn and Austin Meek from the Register Guard Newsroom.
All right, we're back, Austin. Another edition of the Duck Pod. A lot going on around here this time of year. Oregon spring football starts on Saturday, and the conference tournaments for the Pac-12 are looming. I guess we'll start with football. Mario Cristobal at a press conference on Monday, and Oregon introduced Andy Avalos as the new defensive coordinator. Your column was kind of interesting, kind of leading with how Nick Saban, you know, has all this wild success and blows up his staff year after year. You know, a lot of those guys obviously leaving for bigger and better things in terms of their own careers. But what's your takeaway on, I guess, Mario's staff? I think there's three staff changes, including the big one at defensive coordinator.
You know, the thing I said in the column, and I really think, is that if Mario Cristobal had looked at Oregon's season and said, hey, we went 9-4, we won our bowl game, let's just stay the course, we don't need to make any changes, I think I'd be more worried about that than I would be about some shakeup in the coaching staff. So I think Mario Cristobal is probably right when he looked at last year and said, we had a pretty good year, we didn't live up to our potential in some areas, so what do we need to do to address that? Now, I think you can ask the question, is paying $2.5 million potentially to Jim Leavitt and then allocating basically the same amount of money to hire a new defensive coordinator over 3 years, is that the wisest use of their resources in order to take that next step? But if Andy Avalos helps Oregon get to the next level, helps Oregon win the Pac-12 North, helps Oregon contend for the college football playoff, a lot of people are probably going to say that's money well spent.
A lot of times in football, especially in the NFL, if you have a coach who's, you know, an offensive genius and older, and you decide to make a change, usually the next coach is younger and a defensive genius. You usually go the opposite direction. That's what kind of struck me about Andy Avalos compared to Jim Leavitt. Jim is very experienced, kind of quirky, kind of the cliche defensive coordinator, just running around doing a lot of strange things. I mean, defensive coordinators, you know, notoriously are a little bit different, but Andy seems really, I guess, on the ball.
Yeah.
Young, serious, driven. It'll be interesting to see how he does, especially with a lot of the same players and kind of putting his own stamp on the defense, but definitely a different direction than Jim, and it'll be interesting to see how much he can get done in spring football to get his way of doing things processed by the players.
Yeah, Mario Cristobal definitely has a type of coach that he's looking for. I think a type of personality that works well with Mario Cristobal. I don't think Mario Cristobal really cared for any of the quirky Jim persona with Leavitt. I think he's looking for somebody who was, like you said, just a little more focused on just the task at hand. You know, somebody who was young and ambitious and hungry. I mean, that when you look at Mario Cristobal's staff, that's really what he's put together. You know, there's a couple guys who have been around the block, but by and large, his coaching staff, it's a bunch of young guys who are going to go out there and tear it up on the recruiting trail, who, you know, don't necessarily come in with big egos or, you know, big you know, big credentials, like, you know, feeling like they, you know, they've paid their dues and, you know, now they ought to, you know, have a say in how things go. It's just a bunch of guys who are going to put their nose down and grind. And Andy Avalos, I think, fits in with that.
And Mario didn't get into any specifics about why it didn't work out with Jim Leavitt and him in the long term. But one thing he said that was kind of interesting that I didn't really think of, you know, I was aware of, I didn't really think of, is he mentioned that the days of a coach being a coach and just focusing on coaching and not focusing on recruiting, those days are over. And the days of just having a guy on the staff who's only a recruiter and doesn't do a lot of coaching, those days are over. You have to do both at a very high level. And just, it seems like Jim wasn't involved in a lot of the recruiting. As you met on signing day, you know, Mario credited about every assistant with putting that class together and didn't mention Jim. And I know Andy is really uncovered some hidden gems at Boise State, Van Der Esch being the most prominent, the guy who terrorized Justin Herbert in the Las Vegas Bowl is now a star for the Dallas Cowboys. So it seems like he does, as you mentioned, fit that mold where he's young and dynamic and on top of recruiting in addition to his coaching.
Yeah, and it's hard to know how much of that with Leavitt was we didn't see Leavitt out on the recruiting trail because recruiting just wasn't his thing, or how much of it was Mario Cristobal, you know, specifically directing, you know, his assistants to go to certain places and, you know, making sure he wanted his, you know, his guys recruiting the players that really were the priorities for him. Who knows? But I think Andy Avalos certainly fits the mold of the types of, you know, assistants that Mario has on his staff right now. You know, the other thing I mentioned in the column that I was thinking about was I do think with Oregon's defense, it's probably time for us, you know, just in general, to stop making the comparison to Don Pelham and Brady Hoke, and, you know, boy, look at how much Oregon's defense improved with Jim Leavitt, because that's not really the comparison for Oregon anymore, you know, because Oregon's offense isn't going to go back to what it was in the good old days. To me, the comparison now that's relevant is how does Oregon's defense stack up against teams like Washington and Utah, who year in and year out have the best defenses in the Pac-12, because that's the kind of team that Mario Cristobal wants to build. Oregon's defense is a lot better right now than it was 3 years ago. It's not as good as Washington's or Utah's. And the formula for Oregon to win the Pac-12 is much more in line with the formula that Washington and Utah are using now than the formula that Oregon used 3 or 4 years ago. Oregon's going to have to be really, really good on defense, I think, if the Ducks are going to win the Pac-12. Because I just think their offense, it needs to get better. I think it will get better, but I don't think it's going to improve to the point that they can lean on their offense and think they can win the Pac-12 with a defense that gives up 30 points a game. That's not going to happen.
Yeah, it was interesting when he said that what he liked about Avalos is that he thinks he can connect the front end of the defense to the back end of the defense, which is interesting because obviously Mario thinks highly of Joe Salavea, the defensive line coach, Keith Hayward, the safeties coach. They carried that co-defensive coordinator tag last year, but something was missing. Mm-hmm. And you wonder if that was, you know, just Jim doing his own game planning, his own thing in the middle there, and also the inside linebackers coach. So now you have those two holdovers that I think everyone respects and thinks are really good coaches. And now you have Andy, who's going to be coaching the outside linebacker stud position. And you have another new coach, Ken Wilson, who'll be the inside linebackers coach. Spring is going to be important for those four to be on the same page. And maybe they will kind of have a collaborative effort on game plans and stuff like that.
Yeah, it seems like, I mean, it's, we're just going by what we heard on Monday. But there didn't seem to be any fear that Keith Hayward was going to, you know, somehow feel passed over, or that this was going to mess with the chemistry of Oregon staff, that Keith Hayward was considered the front runner for this job. You know, it seemed like it was almost a formality that he was going to get promoted. And then all of a sudden, sort of out of the blue, Oregon hires Andy Avalos for this job. I think it would be natural to wonder, you know, is Keith Hayward going to say, maybe it's time for me to look around. I got passed over for this job. There didn't seem to be any concern about that coming from Mario Cristobal. You know, you wouldn't expect him to stand up there and say, I'm worried about this. But it seems like from what we know about Keith Hayward, you know, that's not going to be an issue that causes problems for Oregon this year. You get the sense that those guys are all aligned enough in what they're doing and what they want to accomplish that they should, you know, it should be better chemistry with Oregon's defensive staff than it was last year with Leavitt.
And circling back to the lead of your column, I think Oregon fans, especially the ones that were so used to the same assistance year after year from Rich Brooks on through Mark Helfrich, they're going to have to get used. This is the new normal. I think there's going to be staff changes every year. Mm-hmm. You know, I know there's a lot of critics out there about Marcus Arroyo and the offense, and certainly they weren't, you know, on all cylinders all year long. But I could see a scenario where Marcus Arroyo, a young guy in the Cliff Kingsbury mode of, in terms of, you know, his look and his age and his experience, if he has a monster year with Justin Herbert, I mean, Kingsbury's in the NFL now as a head coach. I could see him getting a head coaching job somewhere. You know, Avalos, I could see someday going back to Boise State as the head coach if things work out here very well. Keith Hayward is obviously trending upward, is going to be a defensive coordinator somewhere or a head coach somewhere someday, it appears right now. So this is kind of the new normal, and I don't think it's a bad thing to change it up every year.
Yeah, no, Oregon fans got used to seeing the same faces every year on that staff, and you know, there was so much written about this continuity and this culture that Oregon had that had endured through different head coaches. And you know, that there were definitely positives to that, and it was a connection that Oregon had for a lot of years, and fans embraced it. It's just different, you know. It's just two different ways of going about it. But I think the way that Mario Cristobal is going about it is much more in the mold of what you see, you know, most of the top flight programs doing, which is every year you look at your staff and you say, where did we do well? Where can we get better? And you make some changes every year to try to inch yourself a little bit closer to where you want to be. So you're headed out later this week for the Pac-12 women's basketball tournament in Las Vegas. The Ducks locked up the number one seed. Back-to-back Pac-12 regular season championships. What are your expectations for this week in Vegas? Do you think the Ducks roll through it, or are they going to get a challenge?
Well, I think the semifinals are going to be fantastic, and basically, Oregon in the semifinals, barring a major upset, is going to play either UCLA, who just beat them at Matthew Knight Arena, or Arizona State, who, you know, they really struggled with before ultimately beating them in Tempe the other day to clinch the outright title. So that'll be a tough game, certainly. Obviously, you favor Oregon on a neutral court to beat either one of those teams, probably by double digits, but you never know. As we know, one little knee injury here or a foot injury there, and all of a sudden the depth is just nowhere to be found. On the other side, I would expect number two Stanford and number three Oregon State to meet in the other semifinal. So, you know, as someone who looks at storylines, I'm hoping for Civil War Part 3 on Sunday in the championship game, and I think that's a real viable possibility.
Yeah, when I was trying to decide which tournament to go to, it was several weeks ago. At that point in time, it looked like the Oregon women were just going to steamroll everybody. And the Oregon men, you thought, well, maybe they'll get up into the top four. Maybe they'll get a bye. They'll be playing for their lives. Pac-12 men's tournament, it's going to be crazy. Anybody can win. So I decided to do the men's tournament knowing that I would get more chances to cover the Oregon women in the NCAA tournament. I am looking forward to the men's tournament. I think it's going to be a wild few days in Vegas, but I am kind of second guessing myself because I think this women's tournament is going to be really good. It's not going to be a cakewalk for the Oregon women. They've really been tested over the last few weeks. I think Oregon State, stepped it up for those two games and really gave the Ducks the challenge that they'd been looking for all season. Can they get a one seed in the NCAA tournament if they win the Pac-12, do you think?
Yeah, I think if they win the Pac-12 tournament, they'll be 30-3. They will have swept Pac-12 regular season, Pac-12 tournament titles. I think they'll be the number one seed in the Portland regional. If they happen to lose, I think they'll be the number two seed in the Portland regional. I don't know how big a difference that is. Obviously, you're playing, in theory, a better team in the Sweet 16. Before you get to the Elite Eight, but I think they're definitely a lock for Portland as the one or the two seed, and that gives them a great chance to get to the Final Four. Although the quality of the women's Pac-12 this year is much higher, especially at the top end, than the men, I think you made the right choice because that's going to be chaos in the men's tournament. I mean, you have basically 12 teams who probably think we better win this thing or I mean, I'm including Washington. That maybe they're a lock. I don't know to get in the NCAA, but that's going to be fun. I mean, desperation in every single game.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of years you have a conference where you say, "Oh, anybody in this conference can beat anybody," and that's completely bogus because you've got like two or three teams at the bottom who really can't beat anybody. Like maybe they could beat a team in the middle, but. This literally in this year's Pac-12, the last place team, Cal, which is maybe the worst Pac-12 team we've seen since that Oregon State team that went winless in the conference. They beat Washington, the team at the top of the league that had one conference loss at that point. It really could be chaos. I have a fear in the back of my mind that, after thinking all year, oh, this Pac-12 tournament, it's going to be so crazy. It's going to be all chalk, and it's going to be Washington, Arizona State playing for the Pac-12 title. But I do think there's a strong chance we'll see some chaos. And the question is, can Oregon get in the middle of that? They've been such a hard team to figure out this year. There have been times when we've said, oh, it looks like they're starting to get it together. They're going to go on a run. And then as soon as you say that, they have a game where they just go out and lay an egg. So we're kind of back to that point again where they played two games at home last week. They beat Arizona State and Arizona by 54 points combined. So you're starting to say, hey, maybe this team is ready to make a run. But we'll find out what happens this week. They have to play at Washington State. That's a classic example of a game that Oregon should win and should win easily. But in this year's Pac-12, I just don't think you can say, oh, that's an automatic win. So if they go out and lose to Washington State this week, then all of a sudden, they're looking at finishing 8-10 in the Pac-12. They're probably slipping down to 7 or 8 seed. It's really hard to win 4 in 4 days starting from that position. Next to impossible, even in a year like this. So Oregon really needs to at least win one of their last two. Hopefully get up to the 5 or the 6 seed. If not, sneak into that 4th seed and get a bye. That's, to me, the best chance they're going to have to somehow make a run in Vegas.
I just love, and you must love as a columnist, the symbolism that's going to be going on there in Vegas. You have the decadence that is Las Vegas, the lights, the glamour, the money, all that stuff. Losing a lot of money in the casinos, however you want to. And then you'll have Larry Scott there, and you'll have a product that is just extreme mediocrity in terms of the national stage. Nationally, that tournament doesn't matter. No one that wins that tournament is going to go to the Final Four. But in the family, it's just going to be chaos because they're going to fight and scratch, and someone, maybe even Oregon, perhaps the Beavers is going to win that thing and get into the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, you know, you kind of run out of Las Vegas metaphors to use at that tournament after a while. The first time I was there, I was using every bullet, you know, every Vegas metaphor I could think of, and now at this point, it's like, boy, I wonder if I've overused some of those.
So that's at T-Mobile, right?
That is at T-Mobile.
Okay, the women's, for those of you who are going or thinking about going, is at MGM Grand, which where the men's tournament used to be there. I covered a men's tournament or two there. How many fans do you think Oregon needs to send to make that a great atmosphere in Vegas? Seattle obviously is a lot closer.
Yeah.
But Kelly Graves, I was talking to him the other day, and he said he was at Starbucks, and three older women came up to him and said, "Kelly, we're seeing Vegas, can't wait." And he's like, "Oh, the three of you are going? That's great." And they're like, "No, there's going to be 10 of us." So a lot of people of a certain age have planned this, and they want some sunshine and to hit those slot machines.
Yeah.
What do you think the atmosphere will be like for a women's tournament in Las Vegas?
You know, I think it'll be good. I think enough schools will have fan bases like that. I think Oregon State fans will do that. I think some Stanford fans will do that. Utah and Arizona always bring fans to the men's tournament. I don't know if they'll bring as many to the women's tournament. To me, the only bad thing about how these tournaments are set up this year, I really wish they could have overlapped somehow, because I think you would have a ton of Oregon fans who would go down there and say, "Well, we're going for the women, but we're also going to watch the men." Or, "We're going for the men, but we're also going to watch the women." I think if somehow they could figure out how to do that, I think you could get close to a full house for both tournaments.
I don't see why they don't do that. There's two different venues. I know there's other conference tournaments going on, and maybe they're booked up, but it just makes sense. If you're an Oregon men's fan and they flame out and you're there, you're like, okay, we'll go to the women's games, or vice versa. I mean, it just makes a lot more sense, but I understand the Pac-12 wants to give the women their own spotlight, their own stage, but just in terms of getting butts in the seats, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Even if you like just overlap them by a day or something, or even if you start the women's tournament on a Sunday and have your championship game on a Tuesday night, and then the next day the men's tournament starts,
yeah,
you know, at least you would get some overlap. I mean, as it is, you know, anybody who wants to see both of them, you basically got to block out 2 weeks in Vegas, which is, I would not recommend that to anybody who's considering it. You know, do that at your own risk if you think you can survive 2 weeks in Vegas.
All right, before we get out of here, let's bring it full circle. Oregon football, spring football begins on Saturday. I'm not the biggest fan of spring football, but what I do like about it is the coaches and the players are a little more relaxed, a little more casual atmosphere when you're talking to them, getting to know some of the newer faces. What are your like top three storylines for these 14 practices in the spring game, with obviously a new defensive coordinator and some of these highly ranked recruits already on campus?
Yeah, I think number one's got to be the new defense, just figuring out, you know, what's this new scheme going to look like, which guys are going to end up playing slightly different roles in the new defense. Obviously, Kayvon Thibodeau is going to be the star of the show. We don't know, you know, how accessible he'll be from a media standpoint. As you were saying this morning, if Oregon's smart, they'll put him out there front and center, because, you know, his number one recruit in the nation obviously has a personality that is really charismatic. So I think there will be a lot of interest in getting to know him this spring. And I think the wide receiver position. Oregon's got a new receivers coach with Javon Bonite. That was not a position of strength last year, and the one reliable guy just got done at the NFL Combine and is going pro. So who can step in at the receiver position? That's probably what I'm looking at. Anything else you're tuned into this spring?
Well, for the third year in a row, who's going to be the backup quarterback? I mean, Braxton Burmeister is not going to be. He has transferred to Virginia Tech, but this is 3 years in a row, and, you know, if you count Vernon Adams' injury, 4 years in a row where one injury and it could all be over for Oregon. So you have Tyler Shuck. I'm going to get it right, Tyler, Shuck. Someday. It's Shuck. You know, he redshirted last year, got into some games, didn't throw any passes, so he's a redshirt freshman. Certainly looks the part, tall, you know, has been working out like with Justin Herbert, learning from Herbert. And then you have Cale Millen, a true freshman who's already on campus, but apparently has a foot injury and won't be full go the first week. So, yeah, basically two freshmen behind Herbert, and that's what you got. So you got to hope one of those guys is your next franchise guy.
Yeah. Well, have a good time in Vegas. Steve and I will be there next week to take the baton from you. We'll look forward to reading all your coverage of the women's tournament. I will be holding down the fort here with spring football. It's a busy couple weeks, but it's a fun time of year. Thanks, everybody, for checking out the podcast, and we'll be back next week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Duck Pod from DuckSports.com. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. And always available at DuckSports.com.